Welcome back, everybody, to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hemming, and with my co-host, Jen Hahn, still in New York on holiday, but also presumably trying to strike a trade deal. I'm flying solo for this week's weekly roundup, which is probably nothing that anybody should be doing when it comes to Brexit. We need as much help as we can get. So before we get stuck into the 5 points in the weekly news roundup, just a quick reminder to let us know your thoughts at the Brexit Podcast at Twitter, Facebook, or on the website brexitpodcast.com. We love some suggestions for new guests as well, please. So first up with the news roundup, and we're going to go nuclear, and it's the backlash from the Tories' plans as outlined in Article 50 to leave Euratom, which is the European Atomic Energy Community, the body that oversees European nuclear safety. And we took this from BuzzFeed, who ran the headline, "Scientists say Brexit is a mess for British nuclear research and industry." This story has actually been pretty much everywhere today. I'm recording this on the Monday. So the decision to leave Euratom will have profound impacts and may not have been necessary, according to five senior nuclear scientists. Professor Roger Cashmore, who's the chair of the UK Atomic Energy Agency, has said that the situation was a mess and alarming, and that by 2025 we could all be doing our writing by candlelight on a typewriter. So the three main areas that could be affected by Brexit are the transportation of nuclear materials, such as uranium, research, and especially fusion research, and the overseas investment in the development of British nuclear power stations. So it directly affects industry here, of course. The UK government owns one third of the European uranium enrichment company Urenco, which has its head office in Stoke Pogues in Buckinghamshire, and also a Richmond plant in Capenhurst and Cheshire and Springfield near Preston. So Juan Matthews, a visiting professor at the Dalton Nuclear Institute at the University of Manchester, said that if Euratom is jettisoned, we'll need to have cross-border legislation in place to allow the movement and transport of material. He warned there are thousands of jobs at stake, and it's a £1 billion industry which could be held up. So without new treaties, we cannot get fuel for our power stations, and the amount we have is confidential, but it's believed to be about 2 years' worth of uranium, which really isn't a huge amount. Matthews argues that the British government has lost its focus on nuclear power entirely. It's a distraction. We're looking at smaller modular reactors, and there was a government programme for people to submit to by May last year. There was a promise of a roadmap and funding, and then it all went quiet. Speaking to people in the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, it sounds as if they're just too busy. The ministers are too busy. So to complicate matters further, it's not clear whether Euratom is even tied to the European Union. And lawyers are arguing this both ways. It's because the treaties that are set up for safety and non-proliferation have been developed over 50 years, so it could be independent of the EU. Cashmore says it's not just a matter of putting a big X on the front of a treaty. It is far more complicated than that. It should be noted, this does run wider than just purely nuclear power stations and big radioactive hubs all spread over the country. So, for example, one example, as Dr. Nicola Strickland, president of the Royal College of Radiologists, she's got serious concerns that Brexitom, as she calls it, threatens the supply of vital imported radioactive isotopes. They're widely used in scans and treatment for cancer patients. So think on about what the nuclear industry actually does do for us as a society. Dominic Cummings, the former aide to Michael Gove, who was the campaign director of the Vote Leave campaign, is pretty clear with what he thinks. He's described Theresa May's government as morons over plans to drag Britain out of Euratom. He tweeted that Prime Minister May will be ditched unless she scraps the unacceptable bullshit proposal. So the thing about the nuclear industry is it also has some other worries. It is pretty expensive. Hinkley Point is a year and £1.5 billion over budget. So aside from everything we've just discussed, it's still, the nuclear industry still has to attract this investment. Gordon Macron, a professor of science and technology at Sussex University, says the National Audit Office says that Hinkley could cost consumers 30 billion. Euratom seems a trivial problem compared to financing issues. And I think the final point to mention on this is, whilst investment in nuclear as a whole, and then whether we get rid of Euratom or not, they are linked because the uncertainty around it is really going to put off investors. If investors are looking to invest millions or even billions of pounds, they are not going to do it if they have no certainty as to what happens next. Anyway, moving on, point two, and it's the return of that wily old former Coalition Business Secretary, Mr. Vince Cable. Cable says that Brexit may never happen, citing the divisions in the two main parties and a deteriorating economy. He thinks it might regenerate the Liberals' plan for a second referendum as a get-out if and when Brexit proves flawed, although Eurosceptic Tory MP Owen Paterson did hit back and saying that Cable is well behind history. So carrying on with his line, I suppose, Cable also wants to form a cross-party coalition to fight against a hard Brexit. I think he feels that time is ripe. He's letting the MPs go away on their summer holidays to consider a little bit, and then he's going to try and play a strong hand. There's a very strong disaffected group within the Conservative Party that are keeping their heads down at the moment. I think they are very worried about the way their party's going, says Cable. Cable also, he'd retained his seat in Twickenham in the general election. He should be a shoo-in for the next Liberal leader, given no one is actually standing against him. And this whole thing should come to a head when the MPs convene from their summer break and voting on the repeal bill, which we've covered quite a bit in the podcast. Moving on to point three. So good news, or is it, that a US and a UK trade deal will be top of the agenda when Britain leaves the EU? So this is from conversations with Donald Trump and Theresa May at the G20 summit that's taken place over the past week. But manufacturing leaders in the UK are not so sure. They say it won't make up for the overwhelming importance of Europe to exporters. In a piece from Oliver Wright in the Times, in Monday's Times, the EEF, which is the Manufacturers Organisation, has issued a report saying that protectionism has come to the fore since the financial crisis of 2008. So while Theresa May, for example, is keen to outline plans for deals with China, Japan and India, reports at the same time say that one in six companies operating in China have seen trade affected by the government intervention that supports their own local businesses. Backing this up, the world trade levels are down about 20% since before the financial crisis. And the CBI president, Paul Drechsler, added that businesses were still no wiser on what any trade deal will look like in Europe. He's calling again for a transitional deal with full single market access until somebody simply comes up with a plan. In Europe, the numerous business leaders stick with their party line, saying the remaining 27 states are top priority, and I don't see that changing anytime too. And the Times did take this all the way to its leader column, where it urged Theresa May to strike a deal faster with the European Union. And on to point four, but sticking with Theresa May. This is her offer, which I guess this was always going to come back, but this was her offer to give EU citizens in the UK settled status. And this offer has been called a damp squib, according to the European Parliament Chief Brexit Negotiator, Guy Verhofstadt, who said it is far short of what citizens are entitled to. The leaders of the political groups who have signed the joint letter account for two-thirds of the vote of the European Parliament, and it points out that they have the power to reject any Brexit deal before it can go ahead because the Parliament must approve the withdrawal agreement. Cabinet Office Minister Damian Green responded by saying that the basic rights of EU citizens living in the UK would be preserved and that Mr. Verhofstadt needed to read our proposal. So as a reminder to all listeners, EU migrants who've lived in the UK for 5 years, this is a settled status deal, would be granted access to health, education and other benefits, but the PM's proposal would be dependent on the EU state guaranteeing Britons the same rights. Should we just do a quick reminder about what is on offer from both sides? So what the UK is offering EU citizens: all EU nationals lawfully resident for at least 5 years will be able to apply for settled status and able to bring over spouses and children. Those granted settled status will be able to live, work, study and claim benefits, as they can now. EU nationals in the UK for less than 5 years will be able to continue living and working in the UK. Once resident for 5 years, they will be able to apply for settled status. Those arriving after as a yet unconfirmed cut-off point will be able to stay temporarily in order to regularise their status, but with no guarantees. EU citizens who are already permanent residents will need to reapply. British courts will still have jurisdiction over enforcing rights and in full safeguarding the position of EU citizens. So what's the EU offering the UK citizens living on the continent? All British citizens lawfully resident in the EU at the time of Brexit will be able to stay, even if they don't have residency documents. Their existing rights and those of their family members will be fully protected during their lifetimes. British citizens will receive equal treatment enforceable by the European Court of Justice. Existing rules on access to benefits, healthcare and education will be protected. Students will be able to work after graduating without having to comply with third country immigration laws. And that's your final point. So we did address this with co-host Jen in episode 80. Jen comes from Berlin and is directly affected, and it is understandably emotive, and that episode is our most listened to show now. Verhofstadt's no fan of any of it, of course. Of Theresa May's plans or proposal. He says it creates a type of second class citizenship for European citizens in the UK. We don't see why their rights should be diminished, and that would be the case in the proposal. In the end, it's the European Parliament that will say yes or no, and I can tell you it will not be a yes if the rights of European citizens and also the rights of UK citizens living on the continent will be cut off like it is at the moment. And finally, and thanks to The Telegraph for point five, Brexit should be exploited to overthrow a hated European Union law governing marmalade, a German MEP who is furious at the EU's legal definition of jam has said. So this pertains to the directive on fruit jams, jellies, marmalades and sweetened chestnut puree rules that a jam can only be called a marmalade if it contains at least 20% citrus fruit. The 1979 rule supports the UK understanding of marmalade as being made from oranges and lemons. The rare British victory in Brussels has stuck in the craw of Germans and Austrians ever since, who claim jams made from other fruits such as plums or strawberries should be called marmalade too. But under Germany's jam regulation, non-citrus jams must currently be branded confiture and not marmalade. Jakob von Weizsäcker, who's a German socialist member of the European Parliament, believes that Brexit's the perfect opportunity to put that historical wrong right. Allowing marmalade to be called marmalade again could therefore help to sweeten the bitter aftertaste of Brexit for many EU citizens, he said. And that's just about it for the weekly roundup, folks. Thanks for sticking with me as I soldiered on in a lonely furrow. And thanks for sticking with me as we tried to make sense of the logjam of Brexit. Remember to catch up on Facebook and Twitter and nip along to the website brexitpodcast.com. And also, if you got the time to leave a review on iTunes, that would be terrific. The Brexit Podcast is brought to you by myself, Tim Hemming, Jennifer Hahn and Warren Pohl, with the theme music by Kevin MacLeod.